paper, broken glass splintering under its feet. Bones to crunch, to suck out the marrow, to drink the veins. Clary's back hit the wall. She could back up no farther. She felt a movement against her hip and nearly jumped out of her skin. Her pocket. Plunging her hand inside, she drew out the plastic thing she'd taken from Jace. The sensor was shuddering like a cell phone set to vibrate. The hard material was almost painfully hot against her palm. She closed her hand around the sensor just as the creature sprang. The creature hurtled into her, knocking her to the ground, and her head and shoulders slammed against the floor. She twisted to the side, but it was too heavy. It was on top of her, an oppressive, slimy weight that made her want to gag. To eat, it moaned. But it is not allowed to swallow, to savor. The hot breath in her face stank of blood. She couldn't breathe. Her ribs felt like they might shatter. Her arm was pinned between her body and the monster's. The sensor digging into her palm, she twisted, trying to work her hand free. Valentine will never know. He said nothing about a girl. Valentine will not be angry. Its lipless mouth twitched as its jaws opened slowly, a wave of stinking breath hot in her face. Clary's hand came free. With a scream, she hit out at the thing, wanting to smash it, to blind it. She had almost forgotten the sensor. As the creature lunged for her face, jaws wide, she jammed the sensor between its teeth and felt hot, acidic drool coat her wrist and spill in burning drops onto the bare skin of her face and throat. As if from a distance, she could hear herself screaming. Looking almost surprised, the creature jerked back, the sensor lodged between two teeth. It growled a thick, angry buzz and threw its head back. Clary saw it swallow, saw the movement of its throat. I'm next, she thought, panicked. Suddenly, the thing began to twitch. Spasming uncontrollably, it rolled off Clary and onto its back, multiple legs churning the air. Black fluid poured from its mouth. Gasping for air, Clary rolled over and started to scramble away from the thing. She'd nearly reached the door when she heard something whistle through the air next to her head. She tried to duck, but it was too late. An object slammed heavily into the back of her skull, and she collapsed forward into blackness. Light stabbed through her eyelids, blue, white, and red. There was a high wailing noise rising in pitch like the scream of a terrified child. Clary gagged and opened her eyes. She was lying on cold, damp grass. The night sky rippled overhead, the pewter gleam of stars washed out by city lights. Jace knelt beside her, the silver cuffs on his wrists throwing off sparks of light as he tore the piece of cloth he was holding into strips. Don't move. The wailing threatened to split her ears in half. Clary turned her head to the side disobediently and was rewarded with a razoring stab of pain that shot down her back. She was lying on a patch of grass behind Jocelyn's carefully tended rose bushes. The foliage partially hid her view of the street, where a police car, its blue and white light bar flashing, was pulled up to the curb, siren wailing. Already a small knot of neighbors had gathered, staring as the car door opened and two blue uniformed officers emerged. The police. She tried to sit up and gagged again, fingers spasming into the damp earth. I told you not to move, Jace hissed. That Ravener demon got you in the back of the neck. It was half dead, so it wasn't much of a sting, but we still have to get you to the Institute. Hold still. That thing. The monster. It talked. Clary was shuddering uncontrollably. You've heard a demon talk before. Jace's hands were gentle as he slipped the strip of knotted cloth under her neck and tied it. It was smeared with something waxy, like the gardener's salve her mother used to keep her paint and turpentine-abused hands soft. The demon in Pandemonium, it looked like a person. It was an Eidolon demon, a shape-changer. Raveners look like they look, not very attractive, but they're too stupid to care. It said it was going to eat me. But it didn't. You killed it. Jace finished the knot and sat back. To Clary's relief, the pain in the back of her neck had faded. She hauled herself into a sitting position. The police are here. Her voice came out like a frog's croak. We should...
There's nothing they can do. Probably somebody heard you screaming and reported it. 10-1, those aren't real police officers. Demons have a way of hiding their tracks.
My mom, Clary said, forcing the words through her swollen throat. There's ravener poison coursing through your veins right now. You'll be dead in an hour if you don't come with me.
He got to his feet and held out a hand to her. She took it and he pulled her upright. Come on.
The world tilted. Jace slid a hand across her back, holding her steady. He smelled of dirt, blood, and metal.
Can you walk?
I think so. She glanced through the densely blooming bushes. She could see the police coming up the path. One of them, a slim blonde woman, held a flashlight in one hand. As she raised it, Clary saw the hand was fleshless, a skeleton hand sharpened to bone points at the fingertips.
Her hand! I told you they might be demons.
Jace glanced at the back of the house.
We have to get out of here. Can we go through the alley?
Clary shook her head. It's bricked up. There's no way.
Her words dissolved into a fit of coughing. She raised her hand to cover her mouth. It came away red. She whimpered.
He grabbed her wrist, turned it over so the white, vulnerable flesh of her inner arm lay bare under the moonlight. Traceries of blue vein mapped the inside of her skin, carrying poisoned blood to her heart, her brain. Clary felt her knees buckle. There was something in Jace's hand, something sharp and silver. She tried to pull her hand back, but his grip was too hard. She felt a stinging kiss against her skin. When he let go, she saw an inked black symbol like the ones that had covered his skin just below the fold of her wrist. This one looked like a set of overlapping circles.
What's that supposed to do?
It'll hide you, he said, temporarily. He slid the thing Clary had thought was a knife back into his belt. It was a long, luminous cylinder as thick around as an index finger and tapering to a point.
My stele, he said.
Clary didn't ask what that was. She was busy trying not to fall over. The ground was heaving up and down under her feet.
Jace, she said, and she crumpled into him.
He caught her as if he were used to catching fainting girls, as if he did it every day. Maybe he did. He swung her up into his arms, saying something in her ear that sounded like covenant. Clary tipped her head back to look at him, but saw only the stars cartwheeling across the dark sky overhead. Then the bottom dropped out of everything, and even Jace's arms around her were not enough to keep her from falling.
Five. Clave and Covenant.
Do you think she'll ever wake up? It's been 3 days already.
You have to give her time. Demon poison is strong stuff, and she's a mundane. She hasn't got runes to keep her strong like we do.
Mundies die awfully easily, don't they?
Isabel, you know it's bad luck to talk about death in a sick room.
3 days, Clary thought slowly. All her thoughts ran as thickly and slowly as blood or honey. I have to wake up. But she couldn't. Her dreams held her one after the other, a river of images that bore her along like a leaf tossed in a current. She saw her mother lying in a hospital bed, eyes like bruises in her white face. She saw Luke standing atop a pile of bones. Jace with white feathered wings sprouting out of his back, Isabel sitting naked with her whip curled around her like a net of gold rings, Simon with crosses burned into the palms of his hands, angels falling and burning, falling out of the sky.
I told you it was the same girl.
I know. Little thing, isn't she? Jace said she killed a ravener.
Yeah. I thought she was a pixie the first time we saw her. She's not pretty enough to be a pixie, though.
Well, nobody looks their best with demon poison in their veins.
Is Hodge going to call on the brothers?
I hope not. They give me the creeps.
anyone who mutilates themselves like that.
We mutilate ourselves.
I know, Alec, but when we do it, it isn't permanent, and it doesn't always hurt,
if you're old enough.
Speaking of which, where is Jace? He saved her, didn't he? I would have thought he'd take some interest in her recovery.
Hodge said he hasn't been to see her since he brought her here. I guess he doesn't care.
Sometimes I wonder if he...
Look! She moved!
I guess she's alive after all.
A sigh.
I'll tell Hodge.
Clary's eyelids felt as if they had been sewed shut. She imagined she could feel tearing skin as she peeled them slowly open and blinked for the first time in 3 days. She saw a clear blue sky above her, white puffy clouds and chubby angels with gilded ribbons trailing from their wrists.
Am I dead? She wondered. Could heaven actually look like this?
She squeezed her eyes shut and opened them again.
This time she realized that what she was staring at was an arched wooden ceiling painted with the Rococo motif of clouds and cherubs. Painfully, she hauled herself into a sitting position. Every part of her ached, especially the back of her neck. She glanced around. She was tucked into a linen-sheeted bed, one of a long row of similar beds with metal headboards. Her bed had a small nightstand beside it with a white pitcher and cup on it. Lace curtains were pulled across the windows, blocking the light, although she could hear the faint, ever-present New York sounds of traffic coming from outside.
"So you're finally awake," said a dry voice. "Hodge will be pleased. We all thought you'd probably die in your sleep."
Clary turned. Isabel was perched on the next bed, her long, jet-black hair wound into two thick braids that fell past her waist. Her white dress had been replaced by jeans and a tight blue tank top, though the red pendant still winked at her throat. Her dark, spiraling tattoos were gone. Her skin was as unblemished as the surface of a bowl of cream.
"Sorry to disappoint you," Clary's voice rasped like sandpaper.
"Is this the Institute?"
Isabel rolled her eyes. "Is there anything Jace didn't tell you?"
Clary coughed. "This is the Institute, right?"
"Yes, you're in the infirmary, not that you haven't figured that out already." A sudden stabbing pain made Clary clutch at her stomach. She gasped. Isabel looked at her in alarm.
"Are you okay?"
The pain was fading, but Clary was aware of an acid feeling in the back of her throat and a strange lightheadedness.
"My stomach."
"Oh, right, I almost forgot. Hodge said to give you this when he woke up." Isabel grabbed for the ceramic pitcher and poured some of the contents into the matching cup which she handed to Clary. It was full of a cloudy liquid that steamed slightly. It smelled like herbs and something else, something rich and dark.
"You haven't eaten anything in 3 days," Isabel pointed out. "That's probably why you feel sick."
Clary gingerly took a sip. It was delicious, rich and satisfying with a buttery aftertaste.
"What is this?"
Isabel shrugged. "One of Hodge's tisanes. They always work." She slid off the bed, landing on the floor with a cat-like arch of her back. "I'm Isabel Lightwood, by the way. I live here."
"I know your name. I'm Clary. Clary Frey. Did Jace bring me here?"
Isabel nodded. "Hodge was furious. You got ichor and blood all over the carpet in the entryway. If he'd done it while my parents were here, he'd have gotten grounded for sure." She looked at Clary more narrowly. "Jace said you killed that ravener demon all by yourself." A quick image of the scorpion thing with its crabbed, evil face flashed through Clary's mind. She shuddered and clutched the cup more tightly.
"I guess I did."
"But you're a Mundy."
"Amazing, isn't it?"
Clary said, savoring the look of thinly disguised amazement on Isabel's face.
"Where is Jace? Is he around?"
Isabel shrugged. "Somewhere," she said. "I should go tell everyone you're up. Hodge will want to talk to you."
"Hodge is Jace's tutor, right?"
"Hodge tutors us all," she pointed. "The bathroom's through there, and I hung some of my old clothes on the towel rack in case you want to change." Clary went to take another sip from the cup and found that it was empty. She no longer felt hungry or lightheaded either, which was a relief. She set the cup down and hugged the sheet around herself. What happened to my clothes?
They were covered in blood and poison. Jace burned them.
Did he? Asked Clary.
Tell me, is he always really rude, or does he save that for mundanes?
Oh, he's rude to everyone, said Isabel airily. It's what makes him so damn sexy. That, and he's killed more demons than anyone else his age.
Clary looked at her perplexed.
Isn't he your brother?
That got Isabel's attention. She laughed out loud. Jace? My brother? No, what gave you that idea?
Well, he lives here with you, Clary pointed out. Doesn't he?
Isabel nodded.
Well, yes, but why doesn't he live with his own parents?
For a fleeting moment, Isabel looked uncomfortable.
Because they're dead.
Clary's mouth opened in surprise.
Did they die in an accident?
No. Isabel fidgeted, pushing a dark lock of hair behind her left ear. His mother died when he was born. His father was murdered when he was 10. Jace saw the whole thing.
Oh, Clary said, her voice small. Was it demons?
Isabel got to her feet. Look, I better let everyone know you've woken up. They've been waiting for you to open your eyes for 3 days. Oh, and there's soap in the bathroom, she added.
You might want to clean up a little. You smell.
Clary glared at her.
Thanks a lot.
Anytime. Isabel's clothes looked ridiculous. Clary had to roll the legs on the jeans up several times before she stopped tripping on them, and the plunging neckline of the red tank top only emphasized her lack of what Eric would have called a rack. She cleaned up in the small bathroom using a bar of hard lavender soap. Drying herself with a white hand towel left damp hair straggling around her face in fragrant tangles. She squinted at her reflection in the mirror. There was a purpling bruise high up on her left cheek, and her lips were dry and swollen. I have to call Luke, she thought. Surely there was a phone around here somewhere. Maybe they'd let her use it after she talked to Hodge. She found her Skechers placed neatly at the foot of her infirmary bed, her keys tied into the laces. Sliding her feet inside them, she took a deep breath and left to find Isabel. The corridor outside the infirmary was empty. Clary glanced down at it, perplexed. It looked like the sort of hallway she sometimes found herself racing down in nightmares, shadowy and infinite. Glass lamps blown into the shapes of roses hung at intervals on the walls, and the air smelled like dust and candle wax. In the distance, she could hear a faint and delicate noise like wind chimes shaken by a storm. She set off down the corridor slowly, trailing a hand along the wall. The Victorian-looking wallpaper was faded with age, burgundy and pale gray. Each side of the corridor was lined with closed doors. The sound she was following grew louder. Now she could identify it as the sound of a piano being played with desultory but undeniable skill, though she couldn't identify the tune. Turning the corner, she came to a doorway, the door propped fully open. Peering in, she saw what was clearly a music room. A grand piano stood in one corner, and rows of chairs were arranged against the far wall. A covered harp occupied the center of the room. Jace was seated at the grand piano, his slender hands moving rapidly over the keys. He was barefoot, dressed in jeans and a gray t-shirt, his tawny hair ruffled up around his head as if he'd just woken up. Watching the quick, sure movements of his hands across the keys, Clary remembered how it had felt to be lifted up by those hands, his arms holding her up and the stars hurtling down around her head like a rain of silver tinsel. She must have made some noise because he twisted around on the stool, blinking into the shadows. Alec, he said. Is that you?
It's not Alec, it's me.
She stepped farther into the room.
Clary.
Piano keys jangled as he got to his feet.
Our own sleeping beauty. Who finally kissed you awake?
Nobody. I woke up on my own.
Was there anyone with you?
Isabel, but she went off to get someone. Hodge, I think. She told me to wait, but...
I should have warned her about your habit of never doing what you're told. Jay squinted at her.
Are those Isabel's clothes? They look ridiculous on you.
I could point out that you burned my clothes.
It was purely precautionary. He slid the gleaming black piano cover closed. Come on, I'll take you to Hodge. The Institute was huge, a vast cavernous space that looked less like it had been designed according to a floor plan and more like it had been naturally hollowed out of rock by the passage of water in years. Through half-open doors, Clary glimpsed countless identical small rooms, each with a stripped bed, a nightstand, and a large wooden wardrobe standing open. Pale arches of stone held up high ceilings, many of the arches intricately carved with small figures. She noticed certain repeating motifs, angels and swords, suns and roses.
"Why does this place have so many bedrooms?" Clary asked. "I thought it was a research institute."
"This is the residential wing. We're pledged to offer safety and lodging to any shadow hunter who requests it. We can house up to 200 people here. But most of these rooms are empty. People come and go. Nobody stays for long. Usually it's just us, Alec, Isabel, Max, their parents, and me and Hodge."
"Max?
You met the beauteous Isabel? Alec is her elder brother. Max is the youngest, but he's overseas with his parents."
"On vacation?"
"Not exactly," Jace hesitated. "You can think of them as foreign diplomats, and of this as an embassy of sorts. Right now they're in the Shadowhunter home country, working out some very delicate peace negotiations. They brought Max with them because he's so young."
"Shadowhunter home country?"
Clary's head was spinning.
"What's it called?"
"Idris. I've never heard of it."
"You wouldn't have."
That irritating superiority was back in his voice. "Mundanes don't know about it. There are wardings, protective spells, up all over the borders. If you tried to cross into Idris, you'd simply find yourself transported instantly from one border to the next. You'd never know what happened."
"So it's not on any maps?"
"Not Mundy ones. For our purposes, you can consider it a small country between Germany and France."
"But there isn't anything between Germany and France, except Switzerland."
"Precisely," said Jace.
"I take it you've been there.
To Idris, I mean."
"I grew up there."
Jace's voice was neutral, but something in his tone let her know that more questions in that direction would not be welcome.
"Most of us do.
There are, of course, shadow hunters all over the world. We have to be everywhere because demonic activity is everywhere. But to a shadow hunter, Idris is always home."
"Like Mecca or Jerusalem," said Clary thoughtfully.
"So most of you are brought up there, and then when you grow up..."
"We're sent where we're needed," said Jace shortly.
"And there are a few, like Isabel and Alec, who grow up away from the home country because that's where their parents are. With all the resources of the Institute here, with Hodge's training..." He broke off. "This is the library." They had reached an arch-shaped set of wooden doors. A blue Persian cat with yellow eyes lay curled in front of them. It raised its head as they approached and yowled.
"Hey, Church," Jace said, stroking the cat's back with the bare foot.
The cat slit its eyes in pleasure.
"Wait," said Clary. "Alec and Isabel and Max, they're the only shadow hunters your age that you know, that you spend time with?"
Jace stopped stroking the cat.
"Yes." "That must get kind of lonely."
"I have everything I need." He pushed the doors open. After a moment's hesitation, she followed him inside. The library was circular, with a ceiling that tapered to a point as if it had been built inside a tower. The walls were lined with books, the shelves so high that tall ladders set on casters were placed along them at intervals. These were no ordinary books, either. These were books bound in leather and velvet, clasped with sturdy-looking locks and hinges made of brass and silver. Their spines were studded with dully glowing jewels and illuminated with gold script. They looked worn in a way that made it clear that these books were not just old, but were well used and had been loved. The floor was polished wood, inlaid with chips of glass and marble and bits of semi-precious stone. The inlay formed a pattern that Clary couldn't quite decipher. It might have been the constellations or even a map of the world. She suspected she'd have to climb up into the tower and look down in order to see it properly. In the center of the room sat a magnificent desk. It was carved from a single slab of wood,
a great heavy piece of oak that gleamed with the dull shine of years. The slab rested upon the backs of two angels, carved from the same wood, their wings gilded and their faces engraved with a look of suffering as if the weight of the slab were breaking their backs. Behind the desk sat a thin man with gray-streaked hair and a long, beaky nose.
"A book lover, I see," he said, smiling at Clary. "You didn't tell me that, Jace."
Jace chuckled. Clary could tell that he had come up behind her and was standing there with his hands in his pockets, grinning that infuriating grin of his. "We haven't done much talking during our short acquaintance," he said. "I'm afraid our reading habits didn't come up." Clary turned around and shot him a glare.
"How can you tell?" she asked the man behind the desk. "That I like books, I mean."
"The look on your face when you walked in," he said, standing up and coming around from behind the desk. "Somehow I doubted you were that impressed by me."
Clary stifled a gasp as he rose. For a moment, it seemed to her that he was strangely misshapen, his left shoulder humped and higher than the other. As he approached, she saw that the hunch was actually a bird perched neatly on his shoulder, a glossy, feathered creature with bright black eyes.
"This is Hugo," the man said, touching the bird on his shoulder. "Hugo is a raven, and as such, he knows many things. I, meanwhile, am Hodge Starkweather, a professor of history, and as such, I do not know nearly enough."
Clary laughed a little despite herself and shook his outstretched hand.
"Clary Frey."
"Honored to make your acquaintance," he said. "I would be honored to make the acquaintance of anyone who could kill a Ravner with her bare hands."
"It wasn't my bare hands."
It still felt odd to be congratulated for killing something.
"It was Jace's, well, I don't remember what it was called, but..."
"She means my censer," Jace said. "She shoved it down the thing's throat. The runes must have choked it. I guess I'll need another one," he added, almost as an afterthought. "I should have mentioned that."
"There are several extra in the weapons room," said Hodge.
When he smiled at Clary, a thousand small lines rayed out from around his eyes like the cracks in an old painting.
"That was quick thinking. What gave you the idea of using the censer as a weapon?"
Before she could reply, a sharp laugh sounded through the room. Clary had been so enraptured by the books and distracted by Hodge that she hadn't seen Alex sprawled in an overstuffed red armchair by the empty fireplace.
"I can't believe you buy that story, Hodge," he said.
At first, Clary didn't even register his words. She was too busy staring at him. Like many only children, she was fascinated by the resemblance between siblings. And now, in the full light of day, she could see exactly how much Alec looked like his sister. They had the same jet-black hair, the same slender eyebrows winging up at the corners, the same pale, high-colored skin. But where Isabel was all arrogance, Alec slumped down in the chair as if he hoped nobody would notice him. His lashes were long and dark like Isabel's, but where her eyes were black, his were the dark blue of bottled glass. They gazed at Clary with a hostility as pure and concentrated as acid.
"I'm not quite sure what you mean, Alec."
Hodge raised an eyebrow. Clary wondered how old he was. There was a sort of agelessness to him despite the gray in his hair. He wore a neat gray tweed suit, perfectly pressed. He would have looked like a kindly college professor if it hadn't been for the thick scar that drew up the right side of his face. She wondered how he had gotten it.
"Are you suggesting that she didn't kill that demon after all?"
"Of course she didn't. Look at her, she's a Mundy, Hodge, and a little kid at that. There's no way she took on a Ravener."
"I'm not a little kid," Clary interrupted. "I'm 16 years old. Well, I will be on Sunday."
"The same age as Isabel," Hodge said. "Would you call her a child?"
"Isabel hails from one of the greatest shadow hunter dynasties in history," Alex said dryly. "This girl, on the other hand, hails from New Jersey."
"I'm from Brooklyn," Clary was outraged. "And so what? I just killed a demon in my own house, and you're going to be a dickhead about it because I'm not some spoiled, rotten, rich brat like you and your sister?"
Alec looked astonished.
"What did you call me?"
Jace laughed. "She has a point, Alec," Jace said.
It's those bridge and